During the last years of the 1970s, American filmmaker Alan Frankovich spent his time interviewing CIA whistleblowers, that's people from the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States, and this research culminated in a three-hour documentary called Inside the CIA, On Company Business, amongst scores of eye-popping revelations, mostly about US political warfare in Latin America. Frankovich revealed that both Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and President Nixon were both responsible for ordering Chile's 1973 coup. They famously installed the fascist General Pinochet into power, and over the next 20 years, tens of thousands of Chileans were disappeared. So we're going to hear now from an interview with Alan Frankovich, recorded in 1982, about what he says is the secret U.S. foreign policy.
The CIA, they have a kind of false openness. You see, a lot of what they do, for instance, in overseas posts, is they talk to the press, they manipulate the press. I would say that if you took a percentage of their operations, you would find that a great percentage-wise really have to deal with getting out their line through the media. Because if they accomplish that, in a sense, they control the way you see a situation. They control the way you think about a situation. So they have an ability, really, and they feel very much at ease with press and media. And they have, God knows, the number of books which have been written by former CIA people to take a pro-CIA position. And it's only recently that there are some people like John Stockwell, Philip Agee, and a couple of other people who have really decided, well, if the pro-CIA people are writing books, why don't we write books? But we'll really go into the nature of some of these operations.
So a lot of these people who are CIA operatives that you interviewed thought they were using you and manipulating you to get their point of view across. Wasn't there a point that they found out that this guy Frankovich may be doing a hatchet job on us? And at that time, did you get any less cooperation from the CIA or worse?
I don't think they really paid much attention to what I was doing. See, because it was, I think at the moment when they realized that this film was on a scale that they had not even imagined, because you see, you're dealing with 5 years of your life. You're dealing with a research effort where I researched for film, background film, in just about every film library in the world. I did a range of interviews of 50 to 60 to 80 people. Now, on the other hand, you have to realize that, for instance, one of the persons interviewed in the film is a former president of CBS News, the founding president of CBS News and Public Affairs, and he says that when he became president of CBS News, they had a relationship with the CIA. He inherited this relationship, and it involved providing cover to CIA representatives. But it also involved, and this is incredible, providing any material they had in their news library to the CIA. For instance, the CIA wanted to identify somebody in a country who was leading a demonstration. So you're dealing with a level of collusion, and you're dealing with the fact that there is a level of contact at the top level of the networks, and they're reaching 50 million people a night. So what the CIA is concerned about, they're not concerned about a little book or a little newspaper article in The Nation. They're concerned about things which really tell you the truth about what they're doing. And in this case, in CIA on company business, it's entirely told you by people in the agency. And then reaching a large number of people. Because the very reason they keep their operations secret is because as they try to explain them to us, they would find very little to justify them. And since this country is still a democracy, we're still allowed to vote. And God knows how long that's going to continue. They have to do this thing in secret. In other words, they're keeping them not so much from the other countries. Because I'm sure, for instance, in the case of Chile, that the government of Chile knew the CIA was trying to destroy their government. They're trying to keep them from us.
So, Martin, do you think that that's possibly still true today, that some of the work that the intelligence agencies do is actually trying to conceal the correct facts and manipulate the media and actually conceal those facts from the domestic population? Because that's what he's saying there, essentially.
I can't imagine why anybody would imagine that it's not the case. I mean, that's what intelligence agencies are for, is to deceive. I mean, that's their raison d'etre.
But isn't that surely the idea of an intelligence agency is simply to gather information to equip the armed forces to do their job properly?
Well, actually, you might say that, but of course, that's not actually what happens. That's the textbook, not reality. I mean, there's an investigation going on in the US at the moment about millions of dollars being spent by the Pentagon to persuade the public to support the war in Iraq. So the public's taxes are being used by the state to persuade them into certain lines of action and not other lines of action. There's some question mark over what's going to happen about that, but am I surprised? No, not in the slightest.
Okay, and we've also heard this week about a trial in Italy. I don't know if you've been following that.
Yep.
I think it's something like 20, between 20 and 30 Central Intelligence Agency, 23 CIA officers and agency staff or whatever, have actually been convicted for quite long prison terms in their absence of kidnapping a Muslim cleric and taking him over to Egypt to be tortured. So with that, they have basically just gone round the official. If they want to extradite somebody, they have to go through the legal process, but they didn't in this case. They just kidnapped the guy and took him to Egypt.
Well, yes, I mean, what can one say? I mean, the CIA routinely works outside the law, as do most intelligence services. And of course, if we want to get back on top of this, we've got to put the law back at the heart of what we're trying to do. All of this stuff, the laws for children, you know, in the actual fact, you know, the intelligence services would take no notice of the law, etc. Well, that can't be the way. And the Italian magistrates have done a good job there of saying you can't just come into Italy, take people away and torture them without some comeback. And what people may not be aware of is that the Italian judiciary have wanted George Bush Sr. for many years to question him in relation to the Piazza Fontana bombing in Milan of 1969. Now, there is an Italian warrant out for the arrest of George Bush Sr. in relation to that bombing. But, of course, we don't hear this on News at 10, do we? On the front page of the Sun.
No, another thing Alan was talking about just there was the very close relationship between the intelligence services and, in this case, CBS News, and the head of CBS News actually being prepared to, first of all, hand footage over so that the CIA could identify specific individuals in a demonstration. And I think that there are all sorts of ethical issues involved there. But maybe more importantly, actually providing cover for agents. So that is, you know, having quite a cosy relationship whereby the intelligence service comes to the news organisation. And the intelligence service wants maybe a press pass or a CBS accreditation for one of their agents. And of course, this discredits, you know, journalists as a whole if it's felt that when someone arrives at your doorstep as a journalist, that they may be simply have been provided cover by whichever, maybe the Times or whoever it may be that they're working for.
Well, yes, and that's pernicious, and it means that it puts the lives of journalists at risk, because if people think that journalists are working for things like the CIA, the enemies of the CIA may decide to take it out on journalists as a whole. And the other thing, of course, is that the public is being systematically deceived, neither of which is ultimately acceptable in a democracy, in my view.
Okay, so let's have another listen to a short extract from that same interview back in 1982 with filmmaker Alan Frankovich.
A lot of people were starting to talk for the first time about things which had been done in secret over long periods of time. And I was able, therefore, to interview a whole series of people at every level of the CIA, from directors down to secretaries and accountants, and then spend a great deal of time actually researching coverage of events. Sometimes this involves CIA-created propaganda, which they inserted into the world media, and other times it involved contrasting what we were being told was happening in some country, and then contrasting that with the CIA operatives telling you what they were really doing, and that this was official United States policy, except it was conducted secretly so that we, the citizens of this country, would never know about it. The main point really is that this country has had a secret foreign policy ever since the end of the Second World War, and one of the essential instruments has been the Central Intelligence Agency. You know, we've had presidents, every president since Truman has made great moral pronouncements, but the CIA has been the instrument they have used actually too consistently, and in every part of the world. This is interesting. It's not only in third world countries. The first CIA operations were in Europe. You have the United States government making great moral pronouncements and statements while it's using this instrument to penetrate, infiltrate, and destroy anything which gets in the way of what they define as the interest of the United States. And if you look at the historical record and you look at the countries the film goes into, you find that, for instance, the operations they conduct they haven't bothered asking us if we felt threatened by this, that, or the other thing. And often their economic interest that they're defending, as a matter of fact, I would say almost always. The thing was really to get people in the CIA who were talking for the first time to sit them down, have them tell the audience what they did, and to show consistently over a 30-year period of time that there were certain methods that were used, and they had nothing to do with national security, essentially. They had a lot to do with justifying these operations, whether they were against Chile or Guatemala or Angola or in European context. They had a lot to do with intervening in the internal affairs of a whole series of countries to force them to comply with what the President of the United States wanted these countries to do. And these kinds of activities are not something which just happened in moments of crisis. They go on every day in every country of the world. And they're the official but secret foreign policy of this country. And they're done specifically on presidential orders. And what will happen in 1974 and 1975, and I believe it happened primarily because one of the political parties, in the form of Richard Nixon, started using the same agency inside this country against, not against dissidents, mind you, against a major political party. And therefore, when that starts happening, you have to tell your guys, look, this far, no further. When you start investigating them, you have to make a real investigation because they know all kinds of secrets. They know where all the bodies are buried. And therefore, to rein them in, you have to investigate them. But the conclusions I knew in 1974 or 75, they would never conclude that these were official government operations, that American presidents had ordered them, because the very nature of the CIA is to conduct these operations in secret in such a way that if the CIA is caught, they take the responsibility themselves, and the President of the United States is protected. If you look at the assassinations the CIA claims they planned but never executed, you will find in several cases the Church Committee went into, the Lumumba assassination, the assassination of the Commander-in-Chief of the Chilean Army, that a few days before these people are bumped off, a cable will go out saying, "Don't do it, guys." And nevertheless, it goes ahead. And this is, again, standard CIA operating procedure. These operations are done to preserve the cover, and so that the United States then can take a moral position while eliminating someone that they consider to be an obstacle to what they want to accomplish.
Okay, that's the second part of that interview from 1982. Martin, he was talking there a lot about the Watergate scandal and saying that really that what was actually being used as a tool of foreign policy, a kind of clandestine warfare, was actually turned internally against Nixon's opponents. I mean, do you think that there's any possibility that kind of thing still goes on today?
I think almost certainly. If you think President Nixon was a bit of a rogue, just think of who's been running the United States in the last 8 years before Obama was elected. Even bigger rogues who actually got even less scruple than Nixon, which is incredible to say, is the situation.
And he's also talking about how that these kind of operations are taking place every day, not just in moments of crisis. So is there any kind of scrutiny or accountability of what these intelligence so-called services, the agencies, are up to?
In theory, there is supposed to be. In practice, there isn't very much. Senator Kerry investigated the Iran-Contra affair, and he had a senatorial investigation, and he uncovered the fact that Colonel Oliver North and his associates, many of whom later became Bush administration officials, were involved in the commission of terrorism, drug dealing, and murder, mass murder, and large amounts of drug dealing in order to finance their political allies in Latin America and in Afghanistan. We were talking about that earlier. But nothing was done. All of those people got presidential pardons. One of them was Robert Gates, who's the current U.S. Defense Secretary. it's not very well known, but when a president leaves office, he's allowed to pardon 200 people. And every president has had this power for generations. And, of course, the 200 people they pardon are the people that were doing nasty stuff on their behalf who got caught. And that's the way the American system works. But call me slow, but that doesn't strike me as terribly democratic at all.
So the idea is really, I think, what Alan's saying there is that you've got a secret foreign policy. I mean, what is the point of having a secret foreign policy? Why not just have a foreign policy?
Because you want to appear to be a good guy while you're actually doing nasty things. I mean, Hitler had a secret foreign policy. Britain has a secret foreign policy. Most countries do have secret foreign policies. It's part of the... But what they say in public and what they do in private are two separate things. And maybe we should be moving to a rules-based system, a rule-of-law system, where what you see is what you get. And it's the police in charge of investigating crimes, including crimes carried out by state officials.
Okay, so we're going to move on now to have a little listen to an extract from a film that, it's quite a long 3 hours of, it was a Time Watch film shown on the BBC in 1992 that was one of the last films that Alan Frankovich made, and it's about something called Gladio. Now, can you just give us a bit of an introduction to Operation Gladio?
Gladio was originally set up by NATO intelligence agencies, particularly the US and British, to create a stay-behind force so that if the Soviet Union invaded Western Europe, there would have to be some resistance. These people were going to be the core of that resistance. And, of course, the Soviet Union never did invade Western Europe, as it transpired, but these core groups of intelligence-led terrorists, if you like, then started to do things inside Western European countries which were nothing to do with stopping the Soviets, but everything to do with manipulating the politics, particularly of Italy and Belgium.
And he starts off at the beginning, because it's a three-part film, was shown over 3 weeks back in 1992, and the series really starts off by looking at the end of the Second World War, and he talks about a figure called James Jesus Angleton. Now, do you know much about him?
He was head of CIA counterintelligence, and he was also one of the founders of the CIA, before the OSS, before it became the CIA.
Now, so counterintelligence, that's a little bit like our MI5, is it?
It's making sure that your own people are all reliable.
Let's get this clear, because, I mean, a lot of people are unclear about the distinction between counterintelligence and intelligence operations.
Angleton, when he was originally helping to set up the CIA, or the OSS as it then was in the 40s and the 50s, was not a counterintelligence officer. He subsequently became counterintelligence chief at the CIA, and eventually he was toppled in the 70s when he became so powerful that he was basically bending the intelligence to his own personal predilections, and became a completely megalomaniac figure and had to be taken out, as they say.
Okay, so let's have a listen to an extract from the 1992 BBC Time Watch film about the OSS, the CIA, and James Jesus Angleton.
Alla mattina, appena alzata, oh bella ciao.
As the Allied armies advanced on the capitals of Axis-occupied Europe, the other war, the secret war of agents and partisan groups that had always been part of the bigger war, was to reach its own climax. As the Germans withdrew, they left secret agents in the countries they had occupied. The secret services call such groups stay-behinds. For the retreating Germans, they were the staunchest believers. They were selected from the SS and the fascist Black Legions. They were to become the foot soldiers of the next war about to begin, the Cold War. Ahead of the advancing Allies, always with the first troops, was the OSS, Office of Strategic Services. And that part of the OSS charged with locating enemy stay-behinds had been given the designation X2.
I came in and sent by General Donovan and got in touch with the heads of the military junta of the Committee of National Rule, which is the joint partisan groups. Then Jim Angleton appeared in August. He began recruiting fascists because he figured that the best way to control the communists was to hire fascists. One of the most tough ones was Prince Valerio Borghese, who ran what was known as the 10th Flotilla. These are the guys that would execute partisans and hang them from lampposts all over Italy. Angleton made a deal with Borghese, and then rushed up to save this commander
from the partisans who would have lynched him any time, because he had lynched thousands of partisans.
For 40 years, secret terrorist organizations, many trained by Western intelligence agencies, have manipulated the political control of European sovereign states by a campaign of terror and murder. Originally part of a secret network, these groups changed from being defenders of state security into attackers of the established political order. Until 2 years ago, that secret network was generally known by the single word, Gladio. On November the 9th, 1990, the Prime Minister of Italy, Giulio Andreotti, revealed to his own parliament and the world the existence of a top-secret European-wide network of secret agents. It was called Gladio. This network of stay-behind groups was intended to fight a Soviet invasion of Western Europe. Andreotti's announcement led to an immediate reaction in the capitals of Europe. The suspicion was that some parts of the Gladio structures were involved in internal subversion.
So what does that actually mean, Martin, when he's talking about internal subversion there?
Well, what it actually boiled down to was the encouragement of terrorist attacks both by the left and the right. So one of the worst such attacks was the attack on Bologna railway station in 1980 that killed 83 people. And what the Italian parliamentary inquiry uncovered, we don't hear this on the news at 10 or on the front page of the Sun, was that it was in fact NATO, a NATO operation that killed those people.
There's been parliamentary inquiries in Belgium and in Switzerland and in Italy into this. So, yeah. I mean, this isn't conspiracy theory, is it?
No, I mean, Frankovic's film was shown on the BBC 2 in the Time Watch strand. That is to say, it's historical documentary. This isn't like Panorama uncovering malfeasance or whatever. It's historical documentary. And it was shown once, and I remember watching it in 1992 and thinking, thank goodness this stuff is actually finally coming out and being shown on mainstream British television.
Well, the other
but
thing
it's never been repeated, of course.
Well, some people will say they shouldn't. They have too many repeats on the television, but not this one.
Not this
anyway,
one.
There's also a book out, isn't there? Daniel Ganser, who's a Swiss academic,
NATO's Secret Armies.
So that's also available. Anyway, our final extract is about the 1982 Belgian supermarket bombings. Which
weren't bombings, shootings.
Sorry, the shootings, which came out appeared to come out of nowhere.
30 years of innocence and peace in Belgium were shattered in the early 1980s. Citizens with no expectations of violence were murdered while shopping. No one knew who, no one knew why. Some suspected that right-wing elements in the secret services had penetrated left-wing groups and had even killed their own police to deflect attention from themselves. The suspicion was never proven, but nor did it ever go away.
Top secret. There may be times when host country governments show passivity or indecision in the face of communist subversion. U.S. Army intelligence must have the means of launching special operations which will convince host country governments and public opinion of the reality of the insurgent danger. U.S. Army intelligence should seek to penetrate the insurgency by means of agents on special assignment with the task of forming special action groups among the most radical elements of the insurgency.
The Defense Department and the President don't initiate any of those orders until there is an appropriate occasion.
In cases where the infiltration of agents into the insurgent leadership has not been effectively implemented, it may help to utilize ultra-leftist organizations.
So, Martin, do you think that there's really any relevance to this today, given that this is quite a long time ago that this
well,
was going
let's
on?
Just say, we're talking about 1982, 83. People perhaps listening to this don't remember this, but the Belgian supermarket massacres were where people with kind of Halloween masks and also just like looked like robbers, people with balaclavas, just walked into supermarkets and killed people at random with guns. They didn't even steal anything, so it wasn't like a robbery. And of course at the time people were, what's the motivation for this? Why are these people going around shooting people? But of course you heard the second bit there about the US secret warfare manual. What the Belgian parliamentary inquiry uncovered was that in actual fact these massacres, which is what they were, 18 or 20 people were killed in a couple of incidents, were carried out by these special agents in order to prevent the Belgian socialist government from refusing to sight cruise missiles. The Belgian socialist government was looking set fair to say we're not going to sight cruise missiles in Belgium. And of course Belgium is also the headquarters of NATO. This wasn't acceptable to the Americans, wasn't acceptable to the British either. So they made sure some nasty stuff happened to remind the political class in Belgium who ruled the roost and who the daddy was.
Well, thanks, Marcy, for helping with the analysis of that. Yeah. Coming up next, it's Nemo and Somali Youth.
3CFM is the community radio station for Bristol. It is run by volunteers and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.